We were going for the minimum height that would give you those two other integrated system options without being so high that it would limit your shooting ability. I don't want to misspeak, but there was a military unit that conducted a speed precision study using different height mounts. And what they found was is that a up to a certain point, and they used 226 as part of it, you got quite a bit faster, measurably faster, and you didn't really lose that much accuracy. You did lose some, but it wasn't enough to matter. And again, if you're trying to accomplish a goal, and you've got all of these different variables, you're trying to optimize all of the variables to achieve the goal as best as possible. So you're not shooting PRS for accuracy, maybe it's the only thing that matters. And you're not speed shooting huge plates where just speed matters. You want the product of those two that give you the best optimization for the goal. And we thought we'd do that.
So as I was saying.
Cool. On that note, welcome to the Big Tech Ordnance Podcast. I'm Ike. We have Chris, Ian, and then from Unity, we have Trent and Ben. So, guys, thanks for coming out. Appreciate y'all making the little hop over here from Louisiana. But, if you want to tell us a little bit about yourself, kind of your background, how you got started, and how Unity kind of became to be.
Sure. Well, first off, thanks for having us out here. We appreciate it. And the tour and meeting all you guys. You know, Big Tech's been a great dealer of ours and partner for a long time. So it's great to finally come out here and talk to you guys. Unity started in 2011, 2012, mm-hmm. Out of my garage. And, for the first, 6-7 years, it was a struggle making every mistake you could possibly make in production and shipping, customer service, design, everything. Just kind of a mess. But that time was really important for us because we weren't growing very large, but we were learning a lot. Mm-hmm. So, when we did growing in 2018, 2019, we released Fast Mounts and Hot Button, and we started to kind of get our feet under ourselves with product. And we started growing, we got a lot of the silly mistakes out of the way. So, which is a good thing. I've seen some other companies grow very fast, which is also great, but it's hard to keep up. So,
Your mistakes are magnified, at that level.
Yeah, absolutely. So we started, once we released those products, we started onboarding. The story of Unity is really twofold. One, it's product, but it's also people. And the team that we built from kind of that point on defines who we are today. And now we've got this incredible team, both in business development, marketing, operations, shipping, customer service, everything. It's the real story of Unity is the people. The products obviously come first. Is the angle we've always taken is build the best product we possibly can, solve problems. But it doesn't mean much without the group of people we have. So that's the story in a nutshell, unless there's anything specific you want to know.
What made you want to start a company? Because you told me a little bit about what you used to do before. If you want to share that too, that'd be cool.
But so, what that's what the people want to know.
Yeah, they really don't, I assure you. But, they're going to anyway.
Yeah.
I graduated from the Merchant Marine Academy in 2006. So if you're not familiar with that, it's one of the 5 Federal Service Academies. I wanted to be a fighter pilot in the Navy and didn't get into Annapolis. And in my interview, they said, well, you should go to the Merchant Marine Academy. It's kind of the best little unknown secret. So I went there and graduated, and then I sailed offshore as a mate on a ship in the Gulf of Mexico for a while. Ended up moving into the office for that company, doing some things, but always loved design. And I kind of taught myself design while I was in the academy. And then I got really into shooting in the 2010, 2011, and just thought, I'd design my own shooting products. And 3D printing wasn't quite a thing then, or at least it wasn't affordable then. So I bought a little mini mill and mini lathe from Harbor Freight. And messed around with my garage, made a bunch of really bad parts, and it just kind of grew from there. So then met several various people along the way, like Josh, who's our executive vice president. Met him pretty early on, 13 or 14, and he kind of really runs the show for us now. A lot of the operational stuff, among a bunch of other things as well. But and then we just started attracting incredible people. And building it. So it's, product focus first, people focus second.
What was your first product?
First product ever was the Fusion mount. No, I take that back. First product ever was the Atom One slide. Okay. Yep. And then very shortly, the Fusion mounting system, the Gen 1 of that. And then we got hooked up with Kyle Lamb from Viking Tactics, and we made the Micro Hub for them, which was the extension of the Fusion line, and then built out those accessories, did a couple of other things kind of along the way, started working on some helmet stuff, kind of all over the place. I mean, I think if you go on our website, you'll see that we don't really have one specific product that we focus on. You know, we just started getting into helmet mounts. We released our Summit Helmet Shroud, which is a little bit of departure from our core products, but you'll see future expansion down the road in that direction. And now we really just focus on solving problems for people. You know, I don't have a, while I was in the Navy Reserves, I have zero operational background. I was on active duty for a grand total of maybe 3 weeks. Because they kept canceling funding for our program. So every time I signed up for active duty, they would cancel funding, and I never ended up going. So no operational background, though I love to shoot. Don't get to do it as much anymore. But we just try to find little products that will help people be better at whatever they do. That's, you know, tier one military units, law enforcement, civilian shooters, or just hobbyists. Whatever it is, that, you know, that's kind of what we focus on.
Nice.
And Ben, how'd you get into this whole space?
Kind of stumbled into it, actually. I was in college. I was trying to be a profiler for the FBI. And about my sophomore, junior year, I got approached by Wilcox to come do an internship. They told me, hey, you know, you're going to meet a lot of people that you're going to want to know moving forward. So, you know, they brought me in. I did the whole summer deal. They asked me to come back over the winter break. They liked what I did. And, you know, they ended up offering me a full-time position. At the time, I was like, hey, that's a hell of a lot better than, you know, moving all around the country, trying to jump through all the government hoops to, you know, do the whole FBI thing. So I kind of just ran from it, you know, had the offer when I graduated and worked there for about 6 years. And then, you know, met a ton of good people in the industry, made a lot of connections. And, you know, I was just looking for a change at that point. You know, I met Trent, met Josh. They hired a couple of my former colleagues from Wilcox, and it was kind of just like a match made in heaven. So I just packed up and moved down to Louisiana, and, you know, here we are today. So, it's been great, you know, the whole industry. I never expected to be here, but, you know, I've really enjoyed every step of the way so far. It's been good.
And what were you, what's your role at Unity? What do you do?
I'm the director of dealer and OEM administration, kind of a mouthful, but so anything coming in from our dealers, from our OEMs, from our distributors, it's pretty much coming right through me. Get to interface with our whole BD team and everything, and, you know, kind of work with operations to make it happen on the back end. So I do a little bit of everything at this point, and it's good. It keeps it fresh.
Never a dull moment.
No, never a dull moment, no.
Yeah. What'd you do at Wilcox?
Similar. I was managing their sales department, for a couple of years there, but kind of worked my way up from a dealer relations standpoint. And then I was actually a compliance officer, so doing all the ITAR and the EAR stuff, which was great to have experience in that as well. It's super useful for everything that we do. Yeah. So, just kind of try to be a sponge and soak everything up and just, you know, use it whatever way I can at this point. And
where are you from originally?
I'm from Maine.
Maine.
Yep.
And Florida.
Florida. Well, how'd y'all both end up in – I know how you ended up in Louisiana, but how'd you end up in Louisiana?
Working offshore.
Okay.
Yep. Everything goes out in the Gulf of Mexico, so yeah. That's kind of the central hub.
Okay. And y'all are where at in Louisiana now?
We're in Lafayette, a little sub-town out of Lafayette, but Lafayette's the place everybody knows.
Was it like Broussard?
Yeah, Broussard. Yeah.
We were all wrong earlier that we were talking about it.
Where'd you say it was?
Y'all think?
One said I said Shreveport, and then
I don't think I was
Monroe,
part of that,
and then it's like Josh was like New Orleans, but I think Josh was just randomly throwing out names,
things. And, yeah. Josh is like po' boy, yeah, that's where they're from.
Crawfish,
yeah. What?
The slides that y'all used to make, that was kind of, I think, the Atom One was the first time. Well, I think that was the first Unity product that I had. A while back. What you'll have the Atom 2 coming out. How's that been? I know that's been taking a little while to develop. How's that process been?
That's a serious engineering struggle to make it. We won't go into detail about why, but because of the way it was designed originally, it's very difficult to make. It's possible. It's just very difficult. So we've actually got, we're going to take a different tack with that whole project. And it's going to be, we've shifted focus a little bit from that to some of our other core products. So, you know, this year is a big year for switching and mounts. Next year, we've got some other very cool things we can talk about offline. You can get a sneak peek at. And then the year after that, we've got some other things, but the Atom 2 project's not dead. It's just put on a shelf for a minute while we work on a subcomponent of it that will make a better system. You know, we try to build integrated systems with everything that we do. So with fast mounts, we've got mounts and magnifiers and some other cool things coming out, switches, and now gas cap. You've got those two things that work together and some other ideas down the line. We want to do the same thing with Atom. So it would have ended up being a singular product, and we want to turn it into a system, and we have a good pathway to do that. It's just going to take a little longer than expected.
Gotcha. Speaking of switches, how'd y'all get into that? What made you go down the switching route? Is that just a problem that existed?
Yeah, that's a weird one. So all the manufacturers, all the OEMs make their own switches for their devices, but there's nobody, at least that I know of, that makes switches for everybody else. And so that was a huge void that we thought we could fill. We felt like there were some things that could be done differently about the way we build them. So like now we use a polymer shroud and full rubber overmolding and some other neat things. So we kind of explored that direction with TAPS. The first version of it was programmable. And it was great, but we kind of found out that everybody was programming it the same way. So you're adding in a lot of cost and complexity for something that wasn't really all that valuable. Instead, we just made more configurations, and you'll see now that Axon and SL and Modbutton Lite and everything we make, you can pretty much build whatever you want without having the complicated programming and a battery. So that kind of fell in our lap a little bit, just because there wasn't any competition out there other than the OEMs, and they weren't selling to anybody else. So that's become a great market for us, and we own a lot of IP. We spent, you know, if you go online, we spend a lot of resources on intellectual property. So we've got a lot of patents, a ton of them surrounding switching, future switching, what we call next generation switching now. So that's where we're planning on going there. And same thing with some of the helmet stuff that we're doing, and even in the optics mounts and optics direction as well. So if you're savvy and you want to know what you're working on, well, just recently we started doing NPRs, non-published requests, so our patents aren't published anymore. We found, especially in switching, that we are our own worst enemy. Is that our patent would publish, we would go on to make another one, and we would be cited. So until it's published, they can't cite us. So,
what does that mean, cited?
So if you create a patent, and I'm not a patent expert at all, but if you create a patent for something, and the patent office goes to research it, and they'll say, okay, well, this already exists out here. If it's published, it already exists. Previously, we were getting third-party references, like somebody else has a patent for this switch or has this idea. Then we filed so many, and we started getting so far down the road, we found out that we were getting cited against ourselves. So we started filing non-published
requests. Hey, these Unity guys have something already.
Yeah, like, well, shucks. So we don't publish anymore, and that's the reason why. You know, it's I like seeing what other people are doing. There's so many great companies in this industry. And, you know, helping, and I see a lot of other people getting into switching now, which is great. I think competition is amazing. It pushes everybody forward, you know. But that's the only reason we did it, not for any other competitive reason.
I didn't even know you could, like, request to not be published.
Yeah, it's quite rare. And we file a lot. I don't know how many we file a year. It's more than one a month.
Whoa.
Probably.
Okay.
It's probably pushing two a month at this point, just constantly. And not all of those are new ones. Some of them are continuation applications and things like that. But we spend a lot of resources on IP and future. You know, I'm not really interested in what we're working on now. It's what we are going to be working on, whether we think we can build it or not, you know, 18 months, 2 years from now. I've learned to always just assume that it can be made, even if everybody else says no. And then we'll figure it out along the way.
Hi, I'm Chris from Big Tech's
Ordnance. And I'm Ian from Big Tech's
Ordnance. And today we've got the weekly update. So first off, from Voltor is the classic MER upper receivers, right? So we've got them in foliage green, black, standard black. Those were my picks. What do you got over there?
For all the wheel gun enthusiasts out there, we've started carrying some Safariland Comp 3 and Comp 2 speed loaders for J frames and K frames. So if you guys need a good speed loader for all of your revolver needs, we got some. We have the new Streamlight Wedge XT also. These come in black and FDE. Great little task light. You know, drop your keys underneath the couch. You're looking for your burrito. Good little option from Streamlight. Comes with a little lanyard on it as well.
Solid price point on those. I'll have to reference the price point on
USB-C
those.
USB-C rechargeable, and it has a deep carry pocket clip on it.
Yeah, so option.
Looks great.
Coming up, there's a bunch of classes. We've got Paradox training. Going to be across the street at the range. Doing that the 27th, not this weekend, but next weekend. Anyway, lots of training events coming up. We just also posted the Sons of Liberty.
Oh, yeah, the Armorers
class. Armorers class in May. It's up on the website. Anyway, thanks for watching.
Be safe.
Finger guns.
So on that note, I'm going to ask a question here, and you can answer it or you can say I'm not answering that. How big is Unity, and how, I mean, like, if you're doing all that, how many people do you have devoted, is like, how many smart people are sitting around in a room somewhere, like, coming up with these ideas?
But for us, it's definitely quality over quantity. And the amount of quality people we have, right, if you take the product of those two things, the quality side way outpaces the quantity. We're a very small, lean team. And you would be shocked to know how few people we have, but the level of quality is unmatched. It's really crazy. We've just got some super talented people. So, and everybody has input, you know, we're not afraid to hurt each other's feelings, and it works out really well. You know, everybody there can, if I throw out an idea, I think everybody universally feels comfortable saying that's really stupid, Trent. Like, yeah, you're right. That is really stupid. I shouldn't have said that. I'm sorry.
That's great.
I'm going to go back to mounts because I've got a question.
Actually, I got a question on patents.
Okay.
How long does it take, like, from the time you, like, file it till the patent's, like, actually awarded? I've heard it's, like, you know, a couple of years.
Generally a couple of years on average. Some of them are very quick. Some of them are take years and years and years. But there's other really interesting strategies. If you are thinking about starting a company or you've got a product company, the best investment you can make is a really good patent agent, somebody that really understands the system well and the space that you're in. They are absolutely invaluable because I tried to do it myself at the beginning and it's a disaster. So find somebody that's really good. And that's, you know, part of the, as an extension to our internal team, our external team that we use, all of our legal counsel, our patent agent, all of our vendors, you know, part of those early mistakes that we made were using vendors that didn't really fit us well, either from sizing or industry or just even personality. And now the core set of vendors we have are just a force multiplier for what we do. So we don't need a huge team to accomplish what we do. Internal team, we've got this incredible external team that just kind of does the same thing.
I'll let you do your mount question now.
Okay. That was a good question. Fast mounts. What was the inspiration for y'all? We're like, hey, we're going to make this series of mounts that are just going to bring the sights higher up.
It's a good question, and it's got a bunch of different answers. So one, if you want backup iron sights in them, if that's one of the requirements, they have to be above that plane. If you want to stow the magnifier, it has to be above that as well. So that's kind of sets your minimum height, and then you set your maximum height just by what's comfortable. So we were going for the minimum height that would give you those two other integrated system options without being so high that it would limit your shooting ability. I don't want to misspeak, but there was a military unit that conducted a speed precision study using different height mounts. And what they found is that up to a certain point, and they used 226 as part of it, you got quite a bit faster, measurably faster, and you didn't really lose that much accuracy. You did lose some, but it wasn't enough to matter. And again, if you're trying to accomplish a goal and you've got all of these different variables, you're trying to optimize all of variables to achieve the goal as best as possible. So you're not shooting PRS where accuracy maybe is the only thing that matters, and you're not speed shooting huge plates where just speed matters. You want the product of those two that give you the best optimization for the goal. And we felt like 226 was based on, you know, testing and shooting and some of the other physical constraints with it. It ended up being pretty good. You know, Knights, I think before us had 2.31, and there's a lot of other heights available now. And I would just urge people, you know, I'm not saying that anything higher makes you a worse shooter, but you should go find out, you know, go test it at the range and get yourself in a shot timer and see accuracy and speed or whatever your thing is. Maybe it's just speed and maybe higher is better, or it's just accuracy and lower is better. You know, I don't know. There's a bunch of other considerations too, wearing kit, body armor, helmets, gas masks, things like that, that make it usable.
See, that's a lot better than what I thought when I saw him walk in. I was like, ah, I see why they have tall mounts. Yeah. Because you can't tell, but Trent's, you're kind of tall.
Yeah, kind of tall. Yeah.
I was like,
unconcerningly so, right? Like, you see that guy and you say, I'm glad that I'm not that tall. Yeah.
I didn't say that. But I said that the first time I saw the dude from, who's the dude from Blue Force Gear?
Oh, Kurt.
Kurt. Both of them.
Kurt's really tall. And then, Steven.
Steven.
Yeah.
He's tall and big.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's a big dude.
He's a big dude. Yeah.
He's a cyclist too.
Is he?
Steven. Yeah. I think he's a super accomplished road cyclist.
Oh, wow.
I don't know. All I do is send him stupid memes on Instagram, so I'll have to ask him about his cycling career.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
Cool. So one thing I've noticed, too, is it seems like y'all don't do any, like, it seems like everything you have is pretty original. Like, you came out with the 226 mounts. You didn't make a 193. You didn't make a lower third. It's like, is it, like, people have already done that? There's good stuff out there? You want to, like, do your own thing? Or how come y'all don't have lower mounts?
It's some combination of the two. One, there's so many good companies that make good mounts out there, and competing with them doesn't really make sense. But we also try to find the things that, again, we want to be innovative first. We want to build the best product we possibly can in that innovative space. And kind of anything outside of that is almost a distraction for us. So, you know, some of the projects we have working on are, we either want to build something completely new, or we want to build something that fills a gap that existing products have left. So we either want to create a market for ourselves, which we did, you know, with switches. Wouldn't say we created a market, but there really wasn't anything else out there to compete with it. And it also allowed us to build this just immense IP portfolio and go in a direction that nobody else had gone down yet, at least that I know of. And then with mounts, we wanted to build a system, you know, flip to center didn't exist. Iron sights, backup iron sights and mounts, which especially for law enforcement guys that have regulatory requirements to have those, kind of fills that need. And also is just a value add. If you're going to build a mount with negative space, you might as well put iron sights in it. And there's some other cool things you'll see on the mount, kind of the optics division of the company coming down the road that we can go down. But I just don't see a good reason to compete on an availability basis, right? We want to compete on feature set. So it may not be the lightest, may not be the cheapest, but it should have the best value, right? The most features for the lowest price we can get that for, and the kind of combination of those two things would be value.
Yeah, the optic mount line does extremely well for us. For for the EOTech mounts, the aim point mounts, the flip to center has...
The flip to center is really cool. Yeah, like when that first came out, that was, I thought that was one of the coolest things I've seen.
Yeah. The Omni flip to center was... That helped us out so much because now I'm like,
reduce the skew.
Yeah. Check this out. Boom. It works.
Yeah. And we try to do the same thing internally. Like even the one skew thing is a big deal. People that don't run a business that don't fully understand what that means is, you know, we've got, for instance, on switching, we've got a bazillion SKUs.
I don't want to talk about that.
Yeah, I don't either. but anytime we can combine, you know, you'll see components that we use utilize across as many products as possible, because we've got, I don't know, 1,300 individual part numbers, probably. It's way more than you think. And a lot of it is for, we build things that not for the commercial market, that nobody knows we build, nobody will ever know we build, and they go places and are used in different things. They're not labeled. It's not a huge part of our business, but we do it. And then, we try to be as efficient in the internal business as we are in making products, you know, to be sold commercially. So
y'all do a good job of putting out information too. I know that's totally out of the subject, but y'all do. The email blast, the communications you have with us as dealers, and you're like, hey, this is coming. This is coming, and you can talk about it at this time period. and this is the date where we think we'll have it to you. Is y'all do a good job on that. So.
Well, it's definitely not me. I can assure you of that. So we hired Hallie Nagel from Wendy. And we've got two other guys, John Knopfsinger and Jace Crosby, on our marketing team. And they do just unbelievable work. I mean, stuff that I don't even think about. They think about and take care of, and it's all done. And again, going back to, if you're building a business, find the right people. It's the number one requirement. You know, focus on the best quality product you have and the best people to support it.
What are, speaking on that, what are some other mistakes that you made that early on that you wish you could go back and tell yourself?
Well,
any other advice like for
people? Yeah, maybe it's important to make the mistakes, right? I'll answer the first question, but I wouldn't tell myself, because you can't circumvent that process. If you tell yourself something, you don't fully understand it because it didn't hurt. So it's either finding the wrong vendor, not understanding the market well enough, right? You make assumptions about how things will sell, and sometimes the assumptions are better or worse than you think will happen. And now we've got a really good idea years later because we've got a good bunch of data to support it. And when you start, you may just not have that data. But going back to the people, if you can find a mentor or somebody else that's done it before you, you can learn a lot less painfully that way. There's design things, understanding what the market really wants, and then also knowing when not to listen, right? Mm-hmm. To higher mounts are stupid, and this light already comes with a switch. Why would you make that? You know, so you kind of have to figure that out along the way, and it has to be painful to some degree, right? You have to make mistakes, I think, for that to be a valuable lesson, one that you won't repeat.
Yeah, I think Henry Ford said, if I listened to what people wanted, I would have given them a faster horse or something.
That, right. You know? Right. And there's definitely, you can get very sideways on that too, right? You can think, one of our kind of core tenets is that nobody really has ego, whether it's in a design or a business decision or something else. So, we've got very frequent meetings that I think are pretty efficient, that work well for us to discuss things. And, a lot of the time what I think ends up, I'm proven wrong by the rest of the team, and they're just praying that I get it. And most of the time I do, I'm sure. But, having a good team, a good mix of a lot of deep experience in the industry. And then, someone that Hallie's, we've gone through this rebranding exercise recently. And one of the big things that came out of it is challenge assumptions. And so we want to challenge assumptions about products, about processes, about making the way things have always been done. Mm-hmm. And we try to do that all the time. Again, if you saw how lean we can run things, it's pretty impressive. And it's a testament to how much friggin' effort people are willing to put in to make things better for the team.
Yeah, let's talk switches.
Let's talk switches. So y'all released the taps.
Yep.
And then went into hot button and the mod button, correct? Is that the order that came in?
So we did taps with TNVC. That was a partner product. Can't remember what year that was. 2014, 2015, maybe.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's been a long time. And taps was quite successful. And then we released, and that was a two-button switch. So we built the one-button switch, which was hot button, M-lock, and rail. And then, we did that for light and laser. That was also quite successful. I think that was 2019. And then we built mod button light for mod light. And there's a couple variations of that dual lead mod button light. We hold a patent for a dual pole dome switch that allows us to do that. And then we went into Axon and Axon SL, which were kind of going to replace all the hot button and replace taps in the two button switch. It's much smaller form factor, better ergonomics, much easier to produce. And we rolled all of the lessons learned from taps and hot button, and mod button light was really the first product we rolled all those lessons learned into. And then we extended that further into Axon and Axon SL than what we've got coming in the future.
I know mod button light was like one of our biggest drops here at Big Techs. When those dropped, we had like bags pre-stage for shipment. Like
it was 800 orders in one day went out, over 800 orders in one day went out the door. And it was all mod button light that went out that day. That was I think the largest single drop, not counting surplus mags.
Or Freedom Week at California.
Or Freedom Week. or like a Black Friday.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. We had like 50 bags already preloaded with candy and buttons of like one, 50 pre-bags already made up with two buttons in there and three. And it was just like, okay, stick a label on it and yeah. get it out the door. It
went well.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's an interesting product. That's another challenge assumptions type thing because the Switch is so small comparatively. It's so light. And now going to USB-C instead of the Surefire barrel connector saves it even more weight. I don't know what it weighs, but it's nothing.
Interesting.
So let's talk about that.
Yeah. I was gonna
say. There we go.
The he said USB-C. Now yeah,
there we go. We can go into it now. So I have about 30 questions on my phone here that I'll pull up here in a second. But let's get into USB-C. Why? First of all.
Well, this is a challenge assumptions type thing, right? So our goal is not to release a product for today. It's to build a system for a year from now and 2 years from now. USB-C allows us, Link is what we call it, allows us to support that. USB-C has a high pin density. It's an international standard, carries a lot of current, and there's a ton of things that you can do with it, right? If you just let go of all the preconceptions about what a Switch does now for electronic device control on weapons and even other things, right? Link was not built just for weapon use. It's got other things you'll see in probably 2025. But the high pin density is really the thing to focus on and the standard. We're not building a new connector. There's very, very good connectors out there. You know, Surefire built the flashlight market as far as I'm concerned. Mm-hmm. They built that standard. And we've got nothing but insane amount of respect for Surefire and what they've done. Our goal is really switching related, not so much light related. So we want to take what switching is now and we want to push it as far past into the future as we can. Without getting sideways on it. So there's a lot of things that you can do with switching, and we hold IP for a lot of that stuff. We've got dual-pole dome switch. We have some other cool stuff. If you look deep enough on the internet, you'll probably find, and then you can kind of see where that may go. But we had to have a connector that would support it. USB-C made the most sense, and so we couldn't find an off-the-shelf 90-degree USB-C connector, and you'll see ours. It's tiny. It's like the smallest 90-degree connector I think on Earth. I may be wrong about that, but it's tiny. And it took a lot of engineering work. It took a lot of work to make the thing environmentally sealed. But we did it finally with a lot of iterations and a lot of back and forth. And so the gas cap is the first product. That's the tail cap that goes on for Surefire threads. That's the first product that will utilize Link. Absolutely won't be the last. And the focus really should be on the Link connector and what it'll allow you to do in the future.
So I know like one of the I guess the funnel points or the choke points rather has always been like, you know, the connector, as far as like how much current it allows to pass through and stuff. Is that correct or?
Yeah, that's a little bit of a complicated subject. I'm not a physicist, not electrical engineer. There is voltage drop for any given length, especially with DC current for any given length of wire. So you just can't get around it. It's not a superconductor. But what we found in our testing with a 7-inch cable on Axon, you're getting the same lumen output on a light as you are with a standard just clicky cap on the back. USB-C, again, it's an international standard. There's billions of them out there. It works really, really well. That's why we chose it. There is some benefit with having that international standard. And it's so easy to make. It's so repeatable. And, you know, we're buying super high quality USB-C connectors from, you know, a company that supplies them to the largest electronics manufacturers in the world.
Like Apple now. I'm just saying.
I'm excited about that. I have one cable. It's going to be nice.
Yeah.
One cable to control them all.
Including your flashlight.
It's a wild don't plug it into your flashlight.
What will happen? Have you tried it?
We have. Yeah.
Can you switch it on and off with your phone? Like,
hey, Siri?
Yeah.
No. So we did try it. We plugged a 100-watt laptop charger into a Surefire light with a battery. We left it on for about 30 minutes. And it didn't destroy the light. I mean, so the cells are protected, you know, if you're using protected cells.
Yeah.
And then, you know, whatever magic does, Surefire does in the head, the mod light does in the head, they protect it. So it didn't destroy the light. It will void your warranty. Do not use this podcast. Don't send this podcast to customer service.
Well, there you go. That's all my questions.
Yeah. Well,
what can I stick in the... No, never mind. Hold on. I will...
I know there's some really good questions. I'll let you get to those.
Have you done any, excuse me, output testing? Like, are you getting a higher output with the gas cap compared to the standard, like the DSOO or the UE?
What I'll say is if you use the standard clicky tail cap, no remote switch, mm-hmm. and we call that 100% on with Link, you're getting 100%.
Okay. Cool.
Yep.
Okay, cool. Well, that covers all the questions. No.
Thanks for coming.
So here's a good one from Dan. This was in the Modlite owners group here. We've all had the time where we tripped on the laptop power cord and the port was never the same again. It wouldn't charge unless the cable was plugged in just right, blah, 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 right? How does the gas cap design prevent damaging the plug if you snag it or...
That's a really good question. So the real trick there is actually the cage that goes around it. And that cage is so tight. It's designed so it's line on line, zero to zero to the tail cap, and it clicks in, and it looks plastic, and it is. But the way the cable is routed, so we've got a load cell at a 1,000-pound load cell at the office. So we put a tail cap in there with the plug and the connector. And then you secure the wire to it, and you just pull it until something breaks. And we do it with a light on to see when that breaks.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so it won't break. It breaks at about 45 pounds, which is a lot. And at 35 pounds, when you pull it, there's no damage to it at all. You can see some indentions on the outside of the wire casing, but it's still totally functional. The important part is all the force is being transferred to the cage. The cage actually ends up stretching slightly when you do this. But very little force is sent to the connector and the cable assembly. So that plugs in and out just fine. No damage to it at all.
So when we're talking about the functionality of the, let's say we've got an Exxon SL switch plugged in with the USB-C link to the gas cap, this isn't something that you're charging the light through. This is you're just controlling the light through the switch, through the USB-C, correct?
For now.
For now.
Yeah. So if you think about it, a light is just like a circuit in your house, right? There's a light, there's a switch, and there's a battery. If we go to charge the battery, the light's going to come on, and you're not going to achieve anything. So you can't charge through it right now. We've thought of this years ago. We knew this was going to be a thing. And again, gas cap is the first product in the Link series. So stay tuned on that. Can't talk about where we're going, but it's going to be exciting.
So
that answers like a lot of people in the conversations that we've seen on Instagram and everything. People are like, oh, well, why would you want to do that? You know, they're thinking that at this stage, they're thinking phone charger where you're always plugging it in, plugging out, putting it in, pulling it out. But it's not the way it's currently designed. You're hooking the switch up like you would standard. You put the ring over it to secure it to the gas cap.
Yep.
And then when you need to charge your battery, you take the head off the light and pull the battery out.
For now. Yep.
For now.
Soon, Tim.
Soon.
Yeah. Okay. Yep. So there's just no way around it through the tail cap now. We've tried. There is a way around it. It would require replacing more parts than you'd want to. It's not worth it. So we're going to skip that step and we're going to go to the final destination, which will give you that and so much more. There's so much you can do with it, and it's really unlimited. If you think about, so we're kind of attacking the switching problem, not as I need to turn on devices. It's a user experience, user interface problem. And if you look at like an automotive company or anybody that spends time working on user interfaces, every little thing matters, right? Like remember in vehicles, they went to big touch screens. Well, a touch screen doesn't really work well for some things where knob works great for volume, for changing your fan speed. And that's a UX problem. And we're approaching switching like that, and really everything that we do, but especially switching, because you are interfacing with one or multiple devices, and we want to pull, is without giving away too much, what we want to do is we want to pull the interface from the device back to the switch, and we want to make it super intuitive. Just like if you give a kid an iPhone, it takes them all of 10 seconds to know how to use most of what's on there, because they've spent so much time on it. We want to do the same thing with switching. So right now you see, you know, laser devices with switches and buttons and powers and all kinds of other things that you have to do with them. Just think about if you could make all of that completely intuitive on the switch itself, and Link will support that. And in fact, you have to have Link or something like it to support that, because normal crank connector is just two conductors. You can turn things on or off. If you have software and resistors, you can do a little bit more, but you're still limited. So there's super exciting things to come. So again, Link, the connector is the story, not gas cap. Though gas cap's pretty darn cool.
It is pretty cool. And something you said there, and you can tell me you're not answering that question at all, but you said it the way that it sounds. So your gas caps for other thread patterns, other bodies, is that something that's in the future?
Likely. If there's enough demand for it. Mm-hmm. Okay. We know what the initial demand is for gas cap, and it's huge.
Yeah.
There's, you know, the second one out there is probably Streamlight, the second kind of standard. Because I think everybody that's going to 21700s is still using the Surefire rear thread, so it still works. So if I had to guess, Streamlight, you know, would be the one that we would look at next. No promises, but that's probably where we'd go.
That'd be a good upgrade on a Streamlight to get mm-hmm. a different switch on there.
Yeah, they have sure. the Arisaka that you can put the
oh yeah, to mm-hmm. convert it to a Surefire.
Yeah.
And Arisaka makes good stuff.
Oh yeah.
I'm scrolling here through. There's like so question 17 I had comments here.
Was like, you know, flashlight technology has been expanding pretty rapidly over the years. You know, we're getting brighter and brighter lights. Is, I guess we'll link or gas cap, like and or gas cap, will that allow you to take advantage of like the full output of the light? Or I know like some people have been concerned about, you know, the switches being like the limiting factor on lumen out or, you know, light output as we progress further down that road, like 3 years from now, if we're at much brighter lights.
Yes. The short answer is yes. I think, and I'm not a thermal engineer, but I think you're going to be heat limited in the light mm-hmm. itself before you're amperage limited in the switch and gas cap. So we've designed it to drive lights that would be on a linear scale would be three times as bright as what you have now. And still not, I mean, we've melted it. We've turned up the amperage and melted them entirely. We know where they fail, but there's no light out there that'll do that.
Yeah, I mean, I know I was using when I was in my low-key police chase in New Hampshire a couple weeks ago. I had my mod light on for an extended period of time, and that thing got pretty toasty after, you know, a good like 15 minutes of constant on. I was like, okay, yeah, this is a little hot. Yeah. Let alone when you throw something like that in there and you can like,
yep,
gas it up.
Yeah, my daughter has almost burnt herself multiple times with the mod light.
Yeah.
Running around, I'm like, hey, don't shadow puppet for that long, and then all of a sudden, like, told you, kid.
Yeah, but everyone runs around with a hog handheld headlight. That's her light.
Our kids are going to be blind before their
lights. The big almost teenagers. Biggest river.
Yeah.
So a question here that goes right in on this subject: how does the gas cap and the switch achieve a zero loss?
Well, we say near zero. Near zero. Again, for any length of wire you have, there is voltage drop, and that's loss. So we've designed it using – it's really, again, not an engineer, so someone on the internet's going to correct me. But it's a function of cross-section, right, for voltage drop. The larger it is, the less drop you're going to have. Real thin wires, you have more drop, and there's calculators you can use online. And there's kind of standards that electrical engineers use for that. But, you know, high-quality components, well-designed, good coatings, and a design target that is much higher than what we think we're ever going to get to before we go to what I'll call next-generation switching.
What other questions you got? I mean, like, I want to make sure you get through those.
There was a pretty good thread over in the cloud group this weekend.
Any plans for cloud defense switches?
Well, I think they work on their new legacy body.
Yeah, that's right. They did.
They will work on that. But, you know, pattern. The Scout, I think Modlight calls it the Surefire. No, what do they call it? Surefire infrastructure, Surefire system. I can't remember now, but ModLite's got a term for ecosystem.
Ecosystem, yeah.
Yeah. So that Surefire ecosystem is by far the largest part of it. So now I think all the major manufacturers use that thread pattern.
Yeah, I think you pretty much have to. I mean, there's just so many different companies out there making it for that thread pattern. It's like the, you know, the MLOC standard, basically. You know, that's what everyone uses.
Yeah.
Right.
Like,
yeah, it definitely allows you to do a lot more with the, when using the Surefire ecosystem. Because, I mean, like, I mean, you know it now. I mean, look at all the switches that are available. Mm-hmm. Like, all the good options. You know, I'm an old school Surefire tape switch. You know, the old, like,
yeah, the little one that you attach with Velcro.
Yeah, the 07, was it?
Is ST07.
That the ST07?
That's their 7-inch.
Like, that was my first ever remote switch, and this was like, I was like, oh my gosh.
I think Magpul used to make like a little cradle for it, basically.
But those were like, you knew you were going to wear it out. Like,
yeah, those were 100% a wear part.
But it was just definitely, it was just going to stop working.
Yeah.
I have yet to wear out a mod button light. I don't think
all my rifles are either have Unity or Modbot on there, and
yeah,
I haven't had any issues with
them. Yeah, ever since like that whole series came out, like we used to sell a bunch of, you know, the SR07s and the stuff from Surefire, but that pretty much eliminated that market. Yeah, you know,
I own zero Surefire switches.
So. Yeah, I don't have anything on.
And a lot of Surefire replace tail caps.
DS. Everything has a Surefire tail cap.
So what are we looking on time frame? Y'all said mid-October, I believe, in the email.
I think we said October.
They also didn't state which year.
Yeah. Damn it.
Soon, TM.
It'll be October. I'm quite confident of that now. So I don't know exactly what day in October, and I don't want to say that, but it'll be October.
October 1.
It'll be October.
October 32nd.
Hey, everybody. Chris from Big Techs. Had to jump in the little editing studio here for a really quick message. We don't have the gas caps yet. As of November 3rd, they are still planning on being released here soon. Stay tuned to the website and Unity's website and social media for when that exact date will be. Thanks for watching.
That question's basically asked.
So do you have any other new products coming out this year? You don't have to say what they are, but do you have...
We do. You know, Gas Cap is our biggest product, and we released it in coincidence with DSCI overseas to do that, because that's a big show. That's like the SHOT Show of, Europe. So we released Gas Cap to be shown there. We have a handful of more... We have a couple more things in the Fast series, at least one more. We'll have a big launch at SHOT in the Fast series. That'll be a departure for what we've done to date, and will be very exciting. Mm. Do we bring it?
No.
Dang it. I would have shown you.
He didn't bring hats or the mount.
No, we didn't bring anything.
Nobody told me to bring anything.
He's like, just get on the airplane.
Yeah. I'll show you some pictures of it.
Brandon, you're going to have to like digitally impose the Air Soccer shirt on me.
Wow.
Later. Okay.
So, well, I'll show you some pictures of it, but it's super cool. And then in 24, we've been on a pretty crazy release schedule with a bunch of new products. That will slow down for a short period of time while we support Gas Cap and Link. And then we've got what's planned for a huge 25 release, and I can't talk about that at all, but that's going to be super exciting. But 24 is going to be peppered. You know, I don't know exactly how many products yet, because some of them we are scheduled. Some of them we kind of come up with at the time. Some of them are customer requests. And then we're working on a bunch of other projects that aren't necessarily commercial based as well.
Y'all's booth at SHOT Show is always really awesome, too, because you have all the white rifles set up with all the different mounts and switches and everything. And you can just get your hands on all the product that you have in like one space.
It showcases it really nice, yeah. You know, because it draws you exactly to what the product is, what you're looking at.
Move. Yeah. You're not instead like, oh, look at this sweet M4 or, you know, whatever. It's like, oh no, look at the mount that's on there.
I think I talked more about SHOT Show the year y'all took the white guns for the first time.
Yeah.
I think I talked more about that than everything at SHOT. Like I was like, that is so... That's a good idea.
Yeah,
that was Chip's idea. So Chip's our senior director on the military DOD side. That was his idea. and it did work well. And so I don't know what our shop booth, I think it's largely unchanged this year. I think we've got like a new product section that changes every year with whatever we're releasing. So we'll have a new thing on that. And I don't think we're expanding the booth size. I think it's pretty good, but yeah, we're looking forward to it. We're doing a crazy amount of shows this year. Now that we've got a handful of people. We just hired Joe Nagy. Mm-hmm. So we're super excited about it. He's doing our law enforcement stuff and he's going to, I don't think he's ever home.
No, that dude's always flying somewhere.
Yeah.
Or at least he was. I'm sure he's sure nothing's changed.
Yeah, no, he's. I think he's in Dallas while we're recording this. But so something like 40 shows this year that we're doing.
Yeah, it feels like it's one every single week at this point.
Yeah.
Did you get like a giant Axon SL suit for somebody to wear?
Dang, that's a good idea. What if we got one for you?
I'll wear it. My availability is very.
Yeah. So it sounds like y'all have some pretty cool like testing equipment there at the office. Like any other stuff that you can go into about that?
Yeah, I mean, it's nothing crazy. You know, we've got that big load cell. We've got an integrating light sphere that we do all of our switch testing on. We've got a super cool 3D scanner that we use for metrology and kind of reverse engineering. The 3D printers run almost nonstop, either making sample parts or making fixtures or things that we need for the shop. I'm trying to think what else we have. Yeah, it's not, you know, and all the standard, you know, metrology type stuff. But again, we've gotten to the point now where we rely, once we validate the design internally, our third-party vendors do such a good job of maintaining quality control for us. So, I mean, the stuff gets made, you know, by some of our third-party vendors, and then they check it, and it comes in, and we check it. And by the time it goes out the door, nothing's perfect, of course. But you know, it allows us to have a very small customer service team because we just don't have that many complaints, and we generally try to take care of everybody as best as possible when you know something does go wrong.
And you know, did you have something?
Oh no,
one of the things that I think is cool about how y'all do stuff, for example, is the, you know, like the absolute riser or the standard riser for the EOTech, where you started incorporating the quick release throw lever, right, to that design. You just kind of, there was just a shift like, hey, this can now function like this. Or all the new ones you can also mount the 45 degree backup optic mount, right?
Yep, that's right.
Too. Which is, I need to upgrade mine. I've got a 45-degree offset, but I don't have it mounted to the riser. So the risers are a huge – I don't even know how many I order from you a month. I'd have to go look, but we do a significant amount of optic mounts, and they're just – they don't ever come back. Nobody complains.
No, no.
They go out, and they get used, and they're a solid product.
Yeah.
Solid product.
Yeah, we appreciate that. And, you know, we really pay attention to fixing things in design. So, if you know, something goes out, for instance, early on, people were over-tightening the bolts, and they would break.
Yeah.
And so we track all of that stuff on the back end. We see what's happening, and then we modify the instructions. And we modify, then we put the laser, the torque spec on the bottom of it now, so you can see. And we watch that trend almost in real time come down. And you know, if it's a design issue, we go back and fix it. Though we've gotten pretty good at that lately, not having those. And we do a lot more testing, you know, than we did in 2012. So we really are, you know, our quality policies, we've got an unwavering commitment to quality of design, production, and customer service.
Yeah.
And we really, everybody in the shop takes pride in what they do. You know, everybody's invested in growing the company and, you know, it's nice having a very small team. It's easy to do that. So
are there any plans to make a dedicated M-lock Axon switch, or will it continue to be the adapter kit?
Axon SL or Axon?
Axon S. They don't say.
Say either. We just had something happen. I don't know if it'll be publicized yet, but it will probably continue to not be for reasons, if I can be any vaguer. Fair enough. There's an entity out there that's using it in the Axon SL. By the time this podcast gets released, you'll know we've got an Axon SL MLOC cage. And it functions just like the one it does with ModButton Lite. So it functions, just bolt that, kind of put it over and bolt it to it. We've got the same thing now for Axon SL. And there's an entity that's using those very specifically, so in higher volume. So we'll use those probably. I don't think we'll make a dedicated Axon SL MLOC. Okay. Never say never, but it's not in the plans.
Okay. So when you'll have like a new product, how do you determine like how much to produce? Like, is it just throwing a dart at the wall? I guess now you probably have some good data on stuff, but like something that's completely new, what's the process look like to kind of figure that out?
It's tough. I mean, a combination of one, we do have data now. We understand the market better. Ben works with all the distributors early on to know, like once the product design is done, we know we're going to hit our release date. You know, Ben can describe that process better, but he can go out and get an early guess on what we think we'll want. And then we've got some metrics that we use to see how much we're going to sell direct, how much we'll sell to military and law enforcement, you know, over the course. So it's not perfect, but part of the thing that we do in design now is we design it so we can build it fast. Mm. Like you'll see Summit Shroud is the perfect example of that. The way that that's built, we can make a lot of them very quickly. So if we're wrong about it on the short side, it's very easy to catch up. It's not something that requires a lot of hand assembly. And same thing with Axon and Axon SL, automating that process from being kind of hand built like ModButton was, makes it one, it brings consistency and quality even higher, and it allows us to produce them at a much faster rate. So erring on the side, you know, we don't want to run out of something. And we've gotten a lot better at that over the years. We keep more stock on shelf. We've got better data. So it's kind of a hard question to answer, but, you know, we've just gotten better at it over time. And we've got more, again, quality people really paying attention to what the heck's going on.
Nice. Any other good questions from the group?
I think they here's an Adam 2 question, which we've already covered. The XL or the Axon XL for MLOC. Are any of y'all either of y'all computer gamers? So there's somebody here that asked if it's able to play Crysis, which is
obviously yes.
Then that's all. The big thread, and I was surprised at it, the big thread was in the cloud group. Whenever I commented on somebody's post about mod light switches, that just escalated into a whole another thing. I already asked Jordan's question from the mod light group, and I didn't even post in the big text group because I covered the other ones.
Yeah.
And then Kurt was talking nonsense in the Unity garage.
So I guess what you said, you're going to like 40 different shows this year or something. What are
some of the team is? Yeah, that's a lot.
Where are some shows upcoming that folks might be able to see all that?
Oh gosh, I'd have to, a lot of law enforcement shows.
Yeah,
we'd have to. Can we get you a list?
Yeah,
yeah. I don't know.
I didn't know if you knew some.
Actually, I would like to see that list if you could give me that list.
Yeah.
Ian's going to be our traveling LE guy, so he might be.
Yeah.
Be popping up at some of the same shows.
I know it's a lot of the regional law enforcement, like NTOA, they were at. What's the
Tech Ops? Do y'all go to those? There's like north, south, and east. And
yeah. And DSEI was the big one that we just got back from, or the team just got back from.
Y'all going to shop in Rayford?
I think so.
Yes. But, yes, we are.
Okay, good. Yes. There we go. So, good people.
Yeah.
So we'll know, when do you think we'll know when you will be releasing the gas cap?
Sometime in October.
You guys are going to have products show up on your door, and it's going to be like, look, yep, they released the gas cap.
Yep. We've got our order in. I owe you some Switchology orders here shortly. We've got those up on the website right now to where people can sign up for notification whenever the USB-C link is available for the Axon SL and Axon, which is super cool. And I'm excited.
Yeah, it's going to be great. I'm looking forward to it.
Where can people find information on Unity?
Unity.com.
Yeah. UnityTactical.com.
And you're on the all the socials, Instagram.
I think Instagram is the main one. I think we're on all of them, but I think Instagram's the where most of the action
is. Is it where you have to like type out your entire name for people to find you, or are you
still searchable? All one word. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
yeah, because it won't show if you just type in Unity Tact, it still won't.
No, yeah, you got
to
type it all.
Yeah, all the way to
just
L.
Instagram, man. Yeah, it's
thanks.
Crazy.
Thanks, yeah. Meta. We really appreciate that a lot.
At Unity Tactical.
Yes.
On Instagram.
And you can definitely
the Unity Garage on Facebook, since groups are the big thing. I don't think anybody really does pages anymore.
Whoever's idea it was to use the Team America stuff, kudos. That was a solid.
It's the marketing team, man.
That was a solid. I was laughing so hard when I saw that. I was like, kicking stuff. I was like, that's such a good idea. I'm going to fire Instagram guy. It's horrible.
Yeah, you're telling me.
Did you guys see the, we did James Bond for DSEI? See that we didn't obviously didn't bring the stickers, but yeah,
just, I know this is all my fault, thing. Isn't it?
Well, you guys fly back. Fly
back. Ben's moving back
just
to
airdrop.
Yeah,
we'll get you some. We'll send you a care pack.
Offline question: how do you like those shoes?
I love them.
I've been looking at them, and I'm like, I haven't heard Yeah.
I buy them like two or three pairs at a time, and because inevitably I'll destroy a set, and they're great.
I'm due for like three new pairs of shoes, and they keep on popping up, and I'm like, I really like the look of those shoes.
Are those zero drop?
Yeah, zero drop, super thin, very lightweight.
They make a bunch of other different styles, though, don't they?
Every podcast. We didn't mention Magpul, though, a lot. Did you watch the Magpul videos before you got in to shooting?
Like the art of the dynamic rifle?
Absolutely.
There we go.
Absolutely.
Every podcast, I talk about that.
In front of the TV, just, can I change mags as fast as I can on TV? The answer is no, but can I try?
That's awesome. You got anything over there in the corner?
Check that box now.
That you meant? Thanks. We talked about shoes. We talked about Magpul. We're good.
Yeah, we got it. That's it.
That's a wrap.
See ya.
So, if you've made it this far and you've got a question about the Unity gas cap or the link system or anything Unity related, drop it in the comments. Hopefully somebody from their team will probably see it and respond, or will respond with an answer that might not be correct. So you'll just have to risk that.
Look,
if you've watched or listened to this podcast up to this point, we really appreciate it. Thank you very much. Hit the bell, hit the notification, sign up for the email list, and thank you for tuning in.
Remember to spay and neuter your pets.
Thank you, Bob. Thank you, Bob. Respect.